Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Retronauts Micro. Today's topic is Monster Party, and everybody's invited to listen to this podcast. I am your host for this one, Bob Mackey, and who else is here with me today?
Everybody's infrighted, Henry Gilbert.
Did they really make that same joke twice in that
month? I'm pretty sure they did. The joke is that it's that bad a song.
They're very bad. We're referencing the Mr. Show sketch Monster Parties, which is unrelated to the NES game, but still funny. And I must recommend a Laser Time episode that I think is called Monster Parties. It is a bunch. You thought Monster Mash is the only song about monsters mashing? Oh, no, sir. There are dozens of them.
Yes.
Yeah. And they're much worse. I mean, Monster Mash is like Let It Be compared to all those other songs, I think.
I love the Halloween Shindig song from the from that Mr. Show scene. Though I saw somebody on the internet saying, like, no, the Monster Mash is a song about the song Monster Mash, and you never get to hear that song. Like, no, the Monster Mash is the dance they're doing.
Yeah.
It's a song about, it's just like the Splish Splash song. It's just a song about the dance craze that kids love. Like, they were mashed potatoing, they're doing the Monster Mash. Now, they don't tell you how to do that dance in the song, so it fails in that way as a dance song.
Now, all the monsters are twerking, and frankly, they just can't handle it. It's too much. But, yes, today's episode is about Monster Party, a quote-unquote classic NES game. I feel like it's not a super great game, but it is just so weird and inventive that I have to talk about it. And I like to do a mini Halloween episode every year. This is our Halloween episode. If you're not a Patreon patron, it will get to you after Halloween. So in that case, happy belated All Saints Day. So let's get into it. Before we get into the actual game, Monster Party, I wanted to ask Henry if you have any experience with this game, and I'll talk about my experience.
It was a rental for me, but an unhappy rental, as I recall, because to me, I saw it as, this cover is a lie. I thought this was a game where I will be fighting the Universal Monsters, and I'll get to see all of them. And just from the first moment, I was like, oh, this is like gross 80s monster stuff. Like, it's more My Pet Monster than Universal Monsters. And also, it was just like too punishing. It's
pretty tough.
In my mind, then I was like, this is like the Turtles game. Like, that's how I recall it. So I was not a fan of Monster Party. It was a rental, and then it went back to, let's say, pick and save.
I see. There were no parties to be had in this game. As a kid growing up, I was a huge mega coward when it came to the horror. And I avoided this game because the premise of a monster party was too much for me to handle. Like, there's too many. The cover is kind of scary too. It's just like a bunch of menacing monsters looking at the consumer saying, buy me.
Yes.
There's a prospect of a monster party inside, but
they front load it with the Universal Monsters. When I look closer at in my memory, I was like, oh, it's only the Universal Monsters.
No.
But on the cover farther back, it's like, okay, there's some of the weirdos you're going to see in this game, but much more of the monster. Like, I saw the Bela Lugosi, or the closest to Bela Lugosi they legally could.
They go to great lengths within the game itself to disguise everything they're referencing.
Oh, yeah.
We'll get into that later, but yeah, I was a huge mega coward. Even something as goofy as Monster Party was too much for me to handle. I would get spooked by so many things in video games. I have a much higher tolerance for this now. I don't think it was until my mid-20s that I actually started liking horror movies and started seeking out horror, so I got over that, and I eventually played Monster Party, probably like in the emulation days for the first time, and only revisited it recently for this episode, but we'll talk more about that later. So let's get into some details about this game. It was released in June 1989 in the USA and never in Japan. We'll talk about that later, but it was planned for a Japanese release. And Monster Party was developed by Human Entertainment, an extremely quirky developer. They lasted from 1983 to the year 2000. Their name might sound familiar to you if you're a Retronauts listener. They created the Fire Pro Wrestling series and the Clock Tower series. So two, I think, semi-notable series came out of Human, and they did a lot of other stuff. Henry, you said woo. Tell me your experience with Fire Pro Wrestling.
It's true that we did a whole episode on
that. That's right, WrestleNuts.
Yeah, but
that was 4 years ago.
That's true. Fire Pro was, until the AKI N64 games, my favorite wrestling series, but it was also one that Americans didn't really get to play. We only really got it in English from the GBA, though it was started by the director of NES Pro Wrestling, who then just
made his own
one with Human Entertainment. And now it ended up getting bought up by Spike, and now you can play basically an HD remake, in quotes, of the 2009 PS2 Fire Pro, but it's better than nothing on Steam Greenlight, and they have been making major improvements to it over the months it's been available on Steam, and someday it'll be on PS4. But it was also known that quirkiness you talked about was totally there in the Fire Pro stories.
Oh, for sure.
There's the famous one of in one of the campaigns, your character will commit suicide at the end.
Oh my god. But I think Suda51 wrote that, right?
Yes. Yeah. He was Suda51 got to play around with his darker instincts, which, since we mentioned Suda51, I don't know if he worked on this game or not. I think this would probably be too early.
I think
for
it's
him.
Before his time.
But I will say, when I rewatched the I didn't play it like you, but I watched a full playthrough of it before this, and I think this actually inspired a bit of it. Is very similar to the Suda51 game Shadows of the Damned.
I can see that.
Because, especially in that you go on a tour of different weird places that are just like, this is all just fucked up horror stuff here. Everywhere you go, in just this like kind of slurry of horror references, just like the game. And then the ending ends with like, oh, it was all a dream. It wasn't. And then being told, you're going to do this again. That's exactly, and spoilers for Shadows of the Damned, that is exactly how Shadows of the Damned is.
I finished
and
that
he
game.
Has a fucking bat in the game, too. That's a true. Bat is a major weapon in that.
I finished that game, and I think I enjoyed it, but I have no memories of it.
I enjoyed it. I think
it was like kind of RE4 light, almost.
Yes. It was basically the best playing Suda game ever,
oh, for
I
sure,
think,
yeah.
Because they had Shinji Mikami's influence there, I think, and he was just like, no, this has to play better. Like, this shooting needs to be better.
So like I said before, I think this is one of those games that was rediscovered via emulation in the late 90s, early 2000s, and I feel like this is along with like River City Ransom, where like we would just have these discussions. Remember that game that had like, you know, this in it and that in it? And then when we had access to all the games ever, we rediscovered them. So I feel like this was talked about a lot in that era of the internet where it was like, OMG, Japan is so crazy. Look at all this crazy Japanese stuff. And this is always one of the games featured because there's a lot of fun, quote unquote, English in this game. A lot of poorly translated things. A lot of inexplicable just dialogue.
It's, hello!
Yes.
Baby!
Sorry, I'm dead. Don't hit me, or that was, please don't pick on me, is one of them, I think. So yeah, I think like I want to look more into this, but I think the Universal monster craze had a huge effect on Japan as well as America. It filtered through both cultures because Universal monsters were huge for the kids of the 50s and 60s just because it was like cheap TV fodder. And if you if you listen to like Gilbert Gottfried's podcast and Dana Gould's podcast, those are two men both obsessed with monster movies because it was just TV filler for them growing up.
The 70s in America had a real boom of like monster serials, monster, like this rediscovering of it too. I could see in post-war Japan, when they were importing more and more American content than ever, I could see the Universal Monster films being a big part of that, like that they would be showing in cinemas and whatnot.
There's a lot of Japanese stuff in this game as well. A lot of Japanese.
Yokai. Yes. Rewatching this, I was like, whoa, this is so. Now I know things about Japanese culture more than I did as a 10-year-old. This is really impressive to me.
Yes, those sentient umbrellas that bounce around, those are Japanese yokai. So, yeah. So the story of this game is really great. I love the intro cutscene. So Mark, as a small boy, a very Japanese-looking boy, he's walking home from a baseball game, and he sees a star in the sky, and his eyes get moist. and the gargoyle/alien Bert appears, and it recruits Mark to help him fight monsters in his world. And the way Bert sells this to Mark is not very convincing. He's like, listen, you got to come with me now. I need your bat. It's as good as any weapon. And oh, by the way, I'm going to like fuse with your body without telling you. Yeah. Let's go.
He's like, no, I don't want to. I'm picking up. Like, he's like, no, this is just a bat. Bat? Better.
It doesn't matter. I don't know what that joke is, but sure, why not?
Well, it's hard to keep track a little bit of who's saying everything to because the quotes, look, it's
they're not ascribed
it's not
to anyone. Yeah.
Yes, yeah.
It's still fun though. And this is like a platformer, and the entire game is based around a mechanic I don't think I've seen before or since. I've seen it used selectively, like in boss battles, like in Legend of Zelda: Link to the Past. But most of the game is based around hitting enemy projectiles back to the enemy that shot them at you. And the major issue with that is you don't know which direction they're going to travel after you hit them back. And a lot of boss fights revolve around hitting back the projectiles. So it's always a crapshoot. Like, do I have to be standing here to hit it at a 45-degree angle or there? It seems very, very random.
At least there's a password system to get you back. Like, there's no saves, but at least it doesn't... It's not ghost and goblining you back to the beginning of the stage.
Mercifully, there is a password after every stage, so you can make progress in this game, which is not true of Ghost and Goblins, which I refuse to believe that game has an ending. The other mechanic is when you pick up a pill in the game world, which is telling kids at home, you know, pills are great, eat them, and you'll turn into a fun monster. So you pick up a pill in the game world, you turn into Bert temporarily, who is, like, super powered. He can fly and shoot, like, infinite projectiles. So, ultimately, this game is all based around fighting three bosses in every stage. And these bosses are very hard to fight as Mark. So, the kind of secret goal of this game is to get a pill and immediately run into the boss door that you find in the stage and fight the boss. Because otherwise, it is a hard-ass slog through some of these bosses.
You're in for a hard time. Especially, like, the hitboxes are not easy to tell.
No, no.
Sometimes... having a projectile as opposed to a bat that cannot, it's also like you can, it reminded me of the TMNT games again, of like, you've got 3 pixels in front of you, you're going to hit something. Otherwise, it's especially cruel with like enemies like the reverse mermaid, who it just keeps walking at you. It has no knockback. It's like, I swung my bat as fast as I could. This should be dead, and I still take a hit.
I mean, there are, like, looking at this and playing this, there are some unavoidable hits, which I always hate in games. Like, there should be a way to potentially avoid every attack or every hit. But there are 2 kinds of bosses in this game. This game, the biggest feature for 1989 was just the sheer amount of bosses. There were like 3 per stage, and there are 8 stages. So that's a lot of bosses for an NES game. And they're all distinct, at least in appearance, but they really file down into 2 forms of bosses. There's the one type of boss who will just stand at one side of the screen and fire things at you and that you hit back. And another kind of boss that sort of just marches back and forth, occasionally jumping, and you have to either hit their projectiles back or attack them. And there is no way to avoid getting hit. Maybe there are frame-perfect playthroughs of this where Mark does not get hit, but man, it is hard to avoid getting hit.
I don't see how you actually, without a tool-assisted thing, like it's too vague.
Some of the bosses are so tall that I believe it's the game telling you, no, you need Bert for this. Like, Bert can fly over these bosses when they're marching back and forth.
You should have hoped to get somebody to drop that pill for you. Otherwise, you have no hope against this guy. That pill, by the way, I think is designed intentionally to look like the Akira patch that also has the pill on it. It's at the same angle as the famous one Kaneda wears.
Was the Akira movie 88 in Japan?
It was 88. Okay. The comic was going, it was already quite popular before the movie came out, though.
I can see that.
I would totally see that the game developers would know the manga.
Yeah, this I think Mark needed a cool motorcycle or something like that. So, yeah, this game is definitely gorier than your standard NES game. Even Castlevania.
They got around, like, watching that, I was like, this breaks every rule I've known Nintendo has. Yeah.
Was
like,
Howard Phillips asleep at the Switch or something when he was testing this game? He was drunk.
No, I don't know. By 89, he might have left. He wasn't there through the way through NES, partially because he was getting mistreated.
Yeah, he left for Lucasfilm games. Left for Lucas. And I forget what he did after that. But yeah, like, this is definitely gorier explicitly. Even though it's a very silly, playful game, when you start a stage, the password screen and the stage start screen is just a river of blood with corpses in it and blood dripping down the screen. Like, I'm glad I did not rent this game. That would have freaked the hell out of me as a kid.
Same too with that. I wish they did this trick more. I think they only do it in the first stage of pass that cactus, and then it transforms to, like, oh, those smiley faces, they're all rotting heads.
Yeah, like rotting skulls and bleeding skulls. So there's a certain point in the first stage where when the game starts, it's a little too happy. Like, all the little blocks are smiling, the hills are smiling, and then once you pass a point in the stage, everything flashes and all the tiles change to be horror themed. That is a really cool surprise in a game. It only happens once, but it's a cool kind of pull the rug out from under you effect.
I think it's one of those things like maybe the developers had more energy for something that creative in the first level, and then after that they're like, we got nothing. Or maybe they're like, if we're gonna do this trick, it's got to be the first level because no kid's gonna get to the fifth. We can't count on a player getting to the fifth.
There are other cool ideas that I did not see in any other game at the time. Like, we talked about the bosses, there are at least 2 bosses with very unique mechanics. One of them is just a dead crab who, when you walk into the room, he just says, sorry, I'm dead. And you automatically win the boss fight. It's in the first stage.
Yeah, that's true. I forgot that one. I wish they didn't. how hard would it be to make a key icon? Why does it have to be a question
mark?
Yeah,
it's like, well, I guess there's a
you have to hope you get the key the first time, and they're like, oh, no, just help.
Sometimes it's points, sometimes it's life, and sometimes it's actually the key you need to pass the stage. But yeah, the deceased crab is one of them. The other one is a zombie boss, and they basically say, so you go into the boss arena. All of the boss fights take place in these square rooms. You go into the boss arena with the zombies, and they're like, watch us dance. You have to not touch anything and watch them dance. To win the boss fight. Still. Yeah.
And again, the hyper Japanese-ness of it, I notice now as an adult, like, well, that's
the taiko drum or whatever.
Taiko drum. Yeah. Yeah. This is a specifically Japanese style party here, which, again, this was not released in Japan even.
Yeah.
So
I mean, there are very Japanese bosses in the game, Japanese cultural bosses in the game, like the well, you fight like an evil well.
But, like, that's something. You know, in the 2000s, people would see that as the inventive boss fight of, well, you don't fight, just watch this thing. No, yeah. Listen to them, don't fight. But to do that in 89, like, that's some wild creative stuff.
It's ahead of the game. In fact, you can attack the dancing zombies, and when you attack them, it resets the time you have to wait. So they disintegrate, and then they reform, and then you have to wait longer. So it's a cool way to troll the player, I think.
You gotta think dancing zombies is a Thriller reference. So they're not drawn to look like Michael Jackson.
It's true. It's like, it's a very Japanese thing. I don't know if it's referencing a specific, like, ghost story or something in Japan, but yeah. So what's interesting about this game is that there was never a Japanese release, but it was planned to be released under the title of Parody World Monster Party. And it's funny to see how in Japan the intention was, like, yes, these are all direct parodies of monster things you've seen before. But in America, somebody at Bandai was very savvy, because the amount of ripoff crap that came out in America, I'm being nice by saying crap, but it's just like Metal Gear. Everything in that game is stolen from American movies, and no one cared. Mm-hmm. Somebody at Bandai was savvy enough to be like, we could get our asses sued. If
Contra
any, yeah.
2 was just like, Konami was especially guilty, but I think maybe it was that somebody in Bandai had been through copyright law, or Bandai is, you know, they make toys, so maybe they understood likeness rights a little better than they do in Japan. But also, it's like, copyright laws in Japan and America are just different, so their ideas of it might be they're like, no, it's a reference to Jason, who cares?
Yeah, it's like this is a fun idea I can play with. Yeah, why shouldn't I?
It's not a Jason game.
And actually, like, I appreciate that more than just like, no, that's mine, you could never even reference it. Yes. I get every dollar.
Yeah, it's, I mean, that's why, like, in the recent South Park games, it's a shock, because they just straight up say, oh, they name Marvel movies by name. They name all these things by name that in video games, they never do that. They always want to be like, well, what if we can shoot? Or the people licensing this in another game sue us for putting them in this game.
I get that a lot in Japanese games, too. Still, like, I'm playing Danganronpa V3. And they, like, march up to the line of the reference without saying the reference. So it's like, I hate, like, that spiky hedgehog, I hate him, and things like that. And I remember I was playing the game 999, and a lot of it is based on the Kurt Vonnegut story Cat's Cradle. It references it heavily. Mm-hmm. But it's like, you know that book with that Chemical Ice 9 by that one author? Like, they can never say the name of the book. I'm just like, just say it, he's dead, it's fine, he can't sue you.
I love, you know, hey guys, if you want to read a Kurt Vonnegut book, that one's like 110 pages.
Oh, it's
or
so
something.
Good. Yeah.
It'll go fast, and it is great, so funny, end of the world stuff. Maybe it's more anxiety ridden now than it is. Was.
The context is different now.
Yeah, context is different than when I read it in the Clinton administration.
Mm-hmm. So I want to go over a few of the changes that were in this unreleased version. So, like I said, the Japanese version was an explicit parody of horror things, popular horror things. So there are many changes made to the American version. The hockey mask creatures are now catcher's mask creatures. And I got to say, in the NES era, there are so many Jason characters in games that are just enemies, just like an enemy in a hockey mask, like in the Ninja Turtles game.
Yep,
Jason has a chainsaw, and you fight him.
Japan loved Jason. They loved it. I mean, the entire Splatterhouse series is just Jason.
And I was thinking of the anime series Irresponsible Captain Taylor. Is it Taylor or Tyler? Tyler. There is a character on the ship just named Jason, and it's Jason. Yep. It is just Jason.
I forgot. All
He's
about
a guy
that.
With a mask and a chainsaw who can't talk.
God, that 90s Tyler show. I love that.
It's
so
great.
Much.
Yeah. Oh, it's beautiful.
For my birthday, I got the, my birthday, 16th birthday, I got the Right Stuff subtitled box set, and I just watched, I binge watched it all as I did, as that's how you did it back then, kids. You just put 26 episodes on 8 VHSs than a 9th VHS for the bonuses.
So maybe better than Star Trek, in my opinion. Don't tell the Cat Bailey, though. So here are more changes from the game. Audrey 2 is in this game. That's the first boss you fight. In the American version, it's sort of a generic, more generic plant without a mic and an amp in the room.
It looks like a an eggplant.
I think it's
really,
like a pitcher plant. I think it's a real plant. Yeah.
But even in the America version, it's singing the way that Audrey 2 does in Little Shop of Horrors.
Yes, but the boss in the American version shoots bubbles, while the Japanese version boss shoots musical notes. And in fact,
of course,
they have like a little amp next to Audrey 2 in the Japanese version. In the American version, they just sort of painted over it. You can still jump on it
still
in the American version.
The world. Wow.
Yeah, it's crazy. So even crazier. So the second boss you fight is this pumpkin-headed ghost. He's a ghost with a pumpkin for a head. The boss in the Japanese version is an ape on horseback from Planet of the Apes, and behind the ape is the Statue of Liberty. It's crazy.
I looked at that one. I was like, you guys went way too far with this
one. I personally love it. I love the anime Statue of Liberty sticking out of the sand in the background. There's like a foot sticking out, too. It's great.
They did the best they could and just like, this is white. The only color they had for the Statue of Liberty was white on a black background. But it's also not even like, it's not a naked gorilla. It is dressed as a Planet of the Apes character, too.
And he fires bullets at you on his horse.
It's
other things. So there's a giant spider in the American version. In the Japanese version, it's a head with legs a la The Thing. So deeper references. Mm-hmm. There's a cat in a box boss in the American version. In the Japanese version, it's a Mogwai who changes into a gremlin. It's
Man,
so great.
When I was rewatching the long play, I thought that was maybe a reference to the, at least in America, Japanese cult classic Houzu, but which a cat is a very scary thing in that. But it's throwing at you Japanese like ghost flames stuff too.
That's right. And there's even very, very what I think is maybe going too far in terms of masking this intellectual property theft, where even Dracula and the Mummy can't be portrayed as they look in Universal Monsters. So in the Japanese version, there's a very Bela Lugosi looking Dracula ghost. It's not a boss, it's an enemy. In the American version, they just make it into a bat-like creature. And there's a mummy boss that is just like, oh, it's a mummy wrapped in bandages like any mummy. In the American version, he is sort of translucent. So it's like, you couldn't portray a mummy wrapped in bandages? Somebody was very worried about this game.
I know in America, in the 70s and 80s, in Hollywood, Universal was more protective than ever for their likenesses. So I could see them just going like, nah, I can't even. Any mummy is a mummy. Like, it doesn't matter.
I think the Egyptians trademarked that. But you're right, Henry. Actually, the whole Donkey Kong thing Nintendo went through with Universal, even though Nintendo won, that probably taught gaming companies in Japan, Universal is very litigious.
Yeah, especially Universal. Yeah. And if you're not like, if you're not as big as Nintendo and can't risk, you can't gamble millions of dollars on a lawsuit you might lose, which is, Universal counted on Nintendo like, well, they're just some piddling video game company. We're Universal. If we threaten a lawsuit, they'll sell us their company.
We'll scare the hell out of them.
Yeah, exactly. Little do they know that Hiroshi Yamauchi is a very obstinate man.
He killed so many businesses. Yeah. Left them all in his wake before he died. So we actually didn't know a lot about this Japanese version until fairly recently. In May of 2011, the Japanese prototype for Monster Party leaked on Yahoo Auctions, a card of it. It was given to someone by someone who used to work in the game industry. And if you go back to all of these pre-2011 Monster Party videos, you'll see people saying, you know, why didn't this come out in Japan? They had no idea these plans were in effect for the game and that there was this Japanese prototype that was way different. So it was sold for the equivalent of $6,000 US, and eventually it was the ROM was dumped in July of 2014. We all knew the secret of the Japanese Monster Party. So,
I'm surprised it took 3 whole years for that ROM to get dumped.
People in the collector's market, some people are benevolent. They want the information to be free and people to see these games. Some people are like, this is mine. Well, and I will be the only person who sees it.
If you dump the ROM, you are making your thing worth a lot less.
It's true. Like, it's very complicated. I hate to throw all collectors under the bus.
Yeah. I forgot there was one other big change in there too, that the Grim Reaper was a xenomorph alien.
That's right.
Which is also why, like, the facehugger eggs are still in there. They didn't change that one, but they spit out bubbles.
Yeah, and there are so many, again, like Jason, there are so many NES games and SNES games and Genesis games, all games from that era. There are so many enemies that are just xenomorphs and no one cared.
Yep.
But yeah. Somebody at Bandai was like, I refuse to have us get sued over this.
Nobody owns a Grim Reaper, yeah. Baby.
But on the cover of Monster Party, you see things that would never be in the game, like the Bela Lugosi vampire, I believe the swamp creature is in there.
Yeah, the creature from the Black
Lagoon. Yeah, sorry, I couldn't think of the name.
Yeah, it's a real lie. Like, that. Anything, if they were worried about lawsuits, it's like, well, you should have been worried about a consumer lawsuit suing you for false advertising.
I was promised a Monster Party, good sir. So I asked people to send me in some tweets about this game. I didn't really want to go on for that much longer in this micro episode, so I will read some of these tweets about Monster Party. Thank you if you send in a tweet. I'm sorry if I can't read it. This is just kind of a short burst rap session about Monster Party. A lot of people confuse this with Monster in My Pocket, which is a much better game, but not nearly as inventive. It's a good kind of fun Konami late NES era. Our first tweet is from Ethan Chang, who says, "This was not as good as Monster in My Pocket," which is true. "My brother and I rented it from Farmore, a store that died due to an embezzlement scandal."
Totally. And I that's where I rented a lot of games, too.
Farmore, I can tell you, the headquarters of Farmore, Youngstown, Ohio, where everyone is crooked.
That fucking, that embezzlement hurt your town so much.
There is no honest businessman in Youngstown, Ohio. And yes, it really did hurt Youngstown. It was a great business. So Ectoburger says, "Best non-first-party NES game for me. Wow. It was just so bonkers. The enemies, the irreverence, the Alice in Wonderland nonsense." And he replies after that with, "Sorry, I'm dead." Which is probably the best quote in the game. I want that to be on my tombstone, actually.
That's a good one.
Digital Drought says, "It wasn't the monsters or the surreal imagery that made this game temporarily blacklisted in my house. It was the use of the word hell. And attached to that is a screenshot of the Grim Reaper boss you just mentioned, which says, welcome, entrance to hell."
Wow.
So that's a no-no. Almost like Hitler saying damned. I'm sorry, yeah. Colonel Bad or whatever, yes. Saying damned in Bionic Commando.
And there's also a church with a cross on it in the game, which again, like, that was a Nintendo no-no.
Yeah, no religions get referenced.
Oh, also I want to mention World 5. I never saw it in playing it as a kid until I watched the long play today. But I was like, this... one, the maze house would have driven me crazy and I would have just quit the game as a kid. But second, that the chairs flying around and just all, like, it's the creepiest stage. I think it's very, if I have to say what they're ripping off for that, I would say Poltergeist, especially with the chairs.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, I mean, Splatterhouse rips off Poltergeist a lot with, like, just chairs flying at you. Dead Tom says, "I'm glad the game contains terrifying battles because the idea of monsters getting together for some kind of bash is preposterous." Yes, that's the Mr. Show sketch. I think I'll link to it, or just look up Monster Party's Mr. Show. Every Mr. Show sketch is on YouTube because HBO doesn't care.
You know what? Also, if you love the Monster Mash, listen to Nick Weiger's parody of it, the Monster Fuck.
Yes, it is quite R-rated, but nice. I love how just stupid it is.
Yeah, it's
such, and vulgar. And vulgar.
Weiger, I love Nick Weiger. He's the greatest. He should be on a Retronaut someday. He knows his retro games.
I'm trying to make it happen. So Funky TII says, "Who will you guys cosplay from this game?" I'm going to say the pumpkin ghost who says, "Don't pick on me."
Ooh, I like that one. And I wouldn't want to move around too much, so I'm going to go with that dead spider.
Yes. Sorry, I'm dead. Brian Kent says, "No game has a more beautiful password screen and attaches an image of the river of blood with corpses in it, dripping blood from the ceiling." What an amazing, iconic image.
Again, did Nintendo even touch this? Like this?
I have to wonder.
Especially like if they were shown the ending cutscene of your main character melting, like the flesh rotting off his body, it is immediately revealed to be a dream. So maybe that was their workaround. But like that, if you are, say, a 7-year-old who has played as Mark for probably like dozens of hours to see that end screen.
It's like 3 frames, but it's his flesh melting from his bones.
Yes.
It's really graphic.
That's a real, again, I don't want to credit Suda51 for this because I don't know. I doubt he was involved. He's not old enough, I would say. But that was a very, you know, grasshoppery kind of twist too, of like, you got the princess, but she melts into a corpse, and then you do too.
Everyone's a corpse. So B.Burr says, as a kid, I always assumed Monster Party was somehow a tie-in slash pseudo-sequel to the movie Monster Squad. Hmm. Was Monster Squad a Universal movie?
Like, yes, it was. Okay. That was them trying to 80s up the Universal monsters.
It's not quite working for the teens, are we in?
Yeah. They hoped to. Shockingly, the best thing about the Mummy is the Mummy Demastered, apparently.
Yeah, when I was in Portland, I was walking around at like a 7-Eleven or whatever, and I saw the Mummy on the soda Fanta, and for a second I'm like, oh, that happened. Oh my That's God, right, that actually yeah. happened. There was a movie. What's that? The Universal Dark Universe?
It's supposed to be the Dark Universe. Okay. We shall see if any other film gets made from that. I doubt it.
It won't happen. John Boris says, does this excellent game have a legacy? Is Eversion a Monster Party like? I have played Eversion, and I will say it is probably the closest thing to Monster Party. In fact, Eversion is an indie platformer. I think it's like 4 or 5 years old, but it does the Monster Party shift to like Hell World kind of thing, Ooh. Like from happy-go-lucky platformer to like dripping blood and skulls and death. So I think Eversion is pretty close. I'd be interested in knowing if the creator of that played Monster Party. So these are all Halloween Twitter names, so I assume these will all be different by the time this episode goes live. So Santa Claus says, my mom bought me this game for my NES when I was like 5. She just brought it home one day, like, I knew you would love this, which was odd because I was an easily scared kid. Regardless, she was right, and it became one of my faves, even if I never made it past the first 20 minutes. Wow. Yeah, it's a pretty tough game. Not quite as bad as Ghosts and Goblins, but at least it gives you the mercy of a password. Stevel Dead 2 says, this started my fascination with horror. It would be years before I was brave enough to watch horror movies, but this is the first image I associate with the idea that monsters are cool. Of course they're cool. They want to have a party, right?
Parties are cool.
Larry White says, the box art sold this bad boy. The lie of the box art. I remember my cousins and I renting this game all the time. This game was great. Nostalgia, I'm sure. It's like I said earlier, it doesn't play as well as a 1989 NES game should, but the zaniness of it really, I think, makes it worse.
I appreciate
makes it worse.
I appreciate what they were trying to. There's a lot of, they could have phoned this in a lot more than they did, that is for sure.
Jeremy Signor says, such a weird and wonderful game. The only one I can think of that has you fighting against tempura. That's right. You fight an onion ring, a shrimp, and something else. Like the chicken, maybe, on a skewer.
It's something skewered. Yeah, it's so weird to face tempura. I forgot about that. Again, as a kid, I wouldn't know what the hell that was.
I don't think I knew what that was until I was like in my 20s.
I would think, in general, most Americans outside of New York and LA, perhaps, had no clue what tempura was and did not like Japanese food. Was not a regular thing for people to eat in the 80s. That's why that Simpsons episode, the Blowfish episode, is a good crystallization of the time, where he was like, sushi, I don't know.
Isn't that rough? Who would eat that? So Tyler Meyer says, the moment I passed that green giant tree thing changed my 6-year-old mind forever. And at the age of 6, this is Bob speaking, I didn't know that was a Haniwa statue, which are the same as the Cactors in Final Fantasy, and those weird statues you get in Animal Crossing.
Yeah, those are great.
Those are made by like a civilization in Japan that's like prehistory.
That's why you dig them up in Animal Crossing.
Mark Evans says, another one of those games where strange pills turn you into something way cooler and powerful than you were originally. Just say no, kids. Yes, Mark, I got to say, like, every cartoon about drugs could never portray drugs, so it was just a bag of random pills, like randomly colored pills. So, yeah.
I would say the Saturday Morning All-Stars thing, at the very least, is like, this is crack, this is marijuana.
I think Bugs Bunny holds a joint in that.
Which, like, come on, Bugs. You were smoking those jazz cigarettes back in the 40s.
He's so judgmental in that special, too.
Everyone is. They're such jerks. You're actually going to be a corpse if you keep smoking weed. You're going to be it.
Alf, you eat cats. Don't judge me. Quack Attack says, more like Monster Farty. Stick that in your podcast and read it. I did, Quack Attack. Now you're on the internet forever. Let's see. Let's do one more. It's Official says, in all caps, It's Official. One of the best NES games ever. I still remember the kid who recommended it to me said he used a sword instead of a bat, which has confused me for years. Swords and bats aren't the same thing.
It's much cooler to use a sword, but they make it very clear from the very start of the game, like, this is a bat. It's a baseball.
It's a weapon. That's why I loved Earthbound. Like, they could use, like, modern-day weapons in this game. That's so cool, even though it's just, like, It's a piece of tech that says bat instead of sword. It's not actually a sword that you or bat that you see on the screen.
I think maybe I'm kind of surprised they put that in there too, because another thing they were worried about was like imitatable acts of just like no kid will get their hands on a sword, but if you show a game with a kid like bashing things with a baseball bat, they're like, oh yeah, I could do that. I have a bat.
I bet this actually encouraged a lot of kids to run around in their backyards with bats, like swinging at invisible monsters. Hopefully not any animals they found along the way. That's true horror, everybody. So yeah, thank you for listening to our episode about Monster Party. I hope I did it justice. It's a slight little game that stuck with us mostly because of just how weird it is for the era. And I would love to see like a modern day version of this. The Indie Game E version is sort of similar, but I'd like to see a remake of this in the, actually like, what was that Monster World game they remade recently on Switch?
Oh, it was
Dragon's Trap, right?
Yeah.
If but they remade this that looked like that, I would play through it, I think, and make the game a lot better, too, along the way. So yeah, that's been Retronauts Micro. I've been your host, Bob Mackey. You can find me on Twitter as Bob Servo. My other podcast, of course, is Talking Simpsons. I'm sure you know about it, but if not, is a chronological exploration of The Simpsons on the Lasertime Podcast Network. Every Wednesday, we are going in order through the entire Simpsons. We've been doing it for almost 2.5 years now. We are midway through season 6. It's been so much fun. One of my favorite things to do alongside this, and I think Henry can tell you, our Patreon has some stuff going for it too.
Yes. Hey, I'm HENEREYG on Twitter. You can follow me there for all the updates on Talking Simpsons. But yes, if you enjoy the show but wanted a week early, we stole the Retronauts model of a week early and ad free.
Wait a minute.
It's a week early and ad free on patreon.com/talkingsimpsons. Again, the money goes to support me and Bob doing that Simpsons stuff full time, and also being able to record this, me being on this in the middle of the day as well. Like, and so your support on there really helps, but it's not just to make us live better, but you also get a ton of awesome stuff too that are exclusive to it. Not just the weekly ad-free episodes, week early ad-free episodes, but also every episode of Talking Critic exclusively on there as we go through the Simpsons sister show, The Critic, well, episode by episode.
I can't believe we've done 17 of those so far.
I know. Well, the end is in sight.
We're it's six crazy. Episodes away. Help.
And we also do a monthly community podcast. We have exclusive videos there. We have exclusive interviews there. We just interviewed, especially, hey, Retronauts fans, if you like hearing us talk about old games, we did that a bit with the Ian Jones Quarty, creator of OKKO, who worked on Steven Universe, Adventure Time, Venture Brothers, an animator on the Sonic Mania opening.
Oh, so good.
We talk so much about old games on there with him that I think you'll really enjoy it. There's a free version that you'll find on TalkingSimpsons.com or the traditional Talking Simpsons feed, but the extended version is only on Patreon.com/TalkingSimpsons.
And speaking of Patreons, an equally important Patreon that's still very important is the Retronauts Patreon, of course. It funds most of what we do here because people give us money. You're able to hear podcasts like this. These micros were unlocked. They were a tier on our Patreon, and that's how you're getting extra episodes. So if you want to support the show, go to patreon.com/retronauts, and for $3 a month, you can give any amount you want, but for $3 a month, you get every episode a week ahead of time, ad-free, and at a higher bitrate, and I find people really enjoy the show without ads. That's a very, very easy way to do it, and help us live our lives. So yeah, thanks for listening, folks. We'll see you Monday with a brand new full-length episode. We'll see you then.
Bye.